Hello everybody and welcome to this week's edition of the Wallingford and District Talking Newspaper. We are reading articles from the Wallingford Herald, published on Wednesday, December the 3rd, 2025. Our three readers for the Wallingford Herald are Sue White, Jill Davies and Jane Mulkern, and the copy is Pete Orton. In addition to those articles from the Herald, once we finish with those at the end, you'll find a handful of articles from the monthly magazine which are included for you to have a listen to as well. Your producer today for this this edition is myself, Lawrence.
Hello, I'm Jane. Heater is blamed for fire alert. A faulty heater caused an emergency at a high-tech Oxfordshire lab. Fire crews raced to a reported blaze at the Rutherford Appleton Laboratory in Chiltern on Friday. According to a member of the public, three fire engines were spotted at the site, which is part of the Harwell Science and Innovation Campus near Didcot, with crews using hoses and breathing apparatus. However, now a spokesperson for the laboratory that has 1,200 staff working on particle physics and space science programmes said there was no fire at all. The representative for the Science and Technologies Facilities Council, which supports the operation of the campus, said there was no fire on the Rutherford Appleton Laboratory site and no one has been hurt and there has been no damage to any building.
Hello, I'm Jill. Four councils refuse CCTV cache to improve security. Four Oxfordshire councils have refused to accept funding to improve CCTV in their areas, a senior police figure has claimed. Oxford City Council and South Oxfordshire, Vale of Whitehorse and Cherwell District Councils have all reportedly refused to join a new partnership created by Thames Valley's Police and Crime Commissioner. South Oxfordshire and Vale of Whitehorse Councils dispute claims they refused the offer. West Oxfordshire District Council is the only authority to join and accept the money offered by Matthew Barber's office. Earlier this year, Mr. Barber set out plans to upgrade CCTV across the county. In addition to the investment plans, which would see up-to-date equipment, longer operating hours, and a closer link with police officers on the ground, additional funding was also available to councils to assist with the transition. Following missed deadlines in June, July, and November, Oxford City, Cherwell, South Oxfordshire and Vale of Whitehorse districts have decided not to take up the additional funding and to date have declined to join the partnership, the PCC said. Oxford City Council could have received £61,562. Vale of Whitehorse was offered £44,336. South Oxon was set for £52,000. And Cherwell could have had £72,764. West Oxfordshire Council has accepted £43,760. In a last-ditch attempt to save the project, which is aimed at cutting crime and catching more criminals, the Police and Crime Commissioner has set a new final deadline of December the 19th. It will have to be accepted before then, because the systems will be up and running by April 2026. Mr. Barber said, "It is disappointing the councils have not supported these plans. They are designed to improve public safety and in the long run save councils money. I have ensured there is significant investment from the police, but without the support of the councils, we simply will not be able to go ahead. I want to see CCTV in our communities protected and improved, but I am also committed to ensuring the police have the resources they need on the ground." All councils that did not accept the money were approached for a comment. A spokeswoman for South Oxfordshire and Vale of Whitehorse said, "The councils have received a partnership proposal from TVP and the Office of the Police and Crime Commissioner asking for our comments on the document, which we have done. We have received a further reply from the police on the 27th of November with further comments from them, and they asked for our response by the 5th of December. We are now considering their further points. We are still in discussions on this proposal. We have not declined anything and will continue to work with the police and will endeavour to reach a positive solution.
Hello, I'm Sue. Festive celebrations start countdown to Christmas. Traders and residents in towns across South Oxfordshire have started their countdown to Christmas. In Abingdon, hundreds of people turned out to enjoy the town's annual Christmas extravaganza on Saturday. It was a wet start to the day, but the rain eased off in time for a parade through the town centre, followed by performances in the marketplace and the lights switch on. Traders sold food and crafts from stalls in Bath Street. The parade was led by the Oxford Caledonian Pipers, followed by Amanda Alder's Dance Academy. Guides and Brownies and the cast of Beauty and the Beast from the Cornerstone in Didcot also made an appearance. Bath Street was closed for the craft market, with performances running there throughout the day as well as in the marketplace. The final performance of the day was by Courtney Reddy, starring as Avril Lavigne. In Didcot, new Christmas lights are being tested and a proper festive celebration could be planned for next year, according to the Town Council. In Wallingford, Town Mayor Ros Lester is looking forward to a major Christmas fair celebration for the town this Sunday from 10 a.m. to 5 p.m. There will be food stalls, a lantern procession and a Santa Dash at the event backed by the Town Council. In Wantage, this Friday there will be a Dickensian evening in the marketplace from 6 p.m. Celebrations started with a 50-strong choir at Wantage Parish Church on Saturday. The Wantage Choral Society held there a celebration of Christmas concert and a message of peace, harmony and goodwill was delivered. Classical pieces were played before ending the show with the Christmas Oratorio by Saint-Saëns. Songs were performed by the choir made up of 50 singers, 5 soloists and an organist and were led by music director Hannah Zaki. Judy Price, who travelled from Leamington Spa for the performance, said, "A wonderful concert and I loved the soloists." And there are several very festive photographs to illustrate the article I've just read.
Man remains in hospital. A man remains in hospital a week after being found with a serious head injury in a village, police say. The man was found in Chiltern Close in Benson, near Wallingford, at about 1:40 a.m. on Friday the 21st of November. Thames Valley Police said the man, who has not been named, was still in hospital. The police added that it did not believe a third party was involved at this time. A statement issued by the force at the time of the incident said, "We believe there is no threat to the public at this time. Officers are on scene and investigating the circumstances of how the injuries may have been caused, but we ask that you avoid these areas."
Candidate named for council role. Adriana Partridge has been named the preferred candidate for the key leadership role in Oxfordshire. She's likely to become the new shared chief executive of South Oxfordshire and Vale of White Horse District Councils following the departure of the previous post holder. Both councils will make a final decision at meetings in December. Ms. Partridge currently serves as deputy chief executive, corporate and communities, and has been recommended for the role by the council's joint staff committee. Councillor David Ruan, leader of South Oxfordshire District Council, said, "Adriana has been a valued and widely respected member of our strategic management team for many years and has provided invaluable leadership on many areas to support our communities. Adriana led on the council's response during the pandemic, as well as our emergency housing provision for refugees from Ukraine and Afghanistan, and in recent months has worked tirelessly with neighbouring councils on our response to local government reorganisation. Since 2008, the two councils have operated under a shared chief executive model as part of broader joint working arrangements. Councillor Bethia Thomas, leader of Vale of Whitehorse District Council, said, "I am really pleased that we have been able to offer Adriana the role of chief executive."
Accessible Boat Club up for King's Award. A volunteer-run charity has been nominated for the King's Award for Voluntary Service. Wallingford Accessible Boat Club, WABC, which helps disabled and less mobile people enjoy trips on the River Thames, has been nominated for the UK's highest honour for volunteer groups. John Jenkins, chairman of the charity, said, "We are all absolutely thrilled and so very excited to have been recognised for what we do and the difference we make to people's lives. I believe we were a strong candidate for the KAVS award. While we know the national selection process is highly competitive, we take immense pride in the respect and admiration we've earned across our local community throughout Oxfordshire with the Lieutenancy and beyond. The club is one of only two of its kind on the Thames and the only one operating on the upper stretch of the river." Mr. Jenkins said, "The progress we have made in such a short space of time, 4 years of setup, including coping with COVID, and just 5 years of wheelie boat operations is just remarkable."
Team praised for going above and beyond. A hospital housekeeping team has been recognised for going above and beyond. Oxford Health's Community Rehabilitation Housekeeping Team at Wallingford Community Hospital has been named the winner of Oxford Health's NHS Foundation Trust's October Exceptional People Award. The team was praised for its dedication, attention to detail, and commitment to maintaining a safe, clean, and welcoming environment for patients, visitors, and staff. Mandy Murch, head housekeeper at Wallingford Community Hospital, said, "It means a lot to the team to have been nominated for this award and to be recognised for what we do. The appreciation and the thanks we receive from patients and colleagues means a lot." The team was nominated by Operational Support Manager Joanne Radborn and Administrative Assistant Teresa Harries. They were recognised not only for their high standards of cleanliness, but also for their teamwork, proactive attitude, and willingness to take on extra responsibilities during busy periods. Ms. Radborn said, "I truly believe we are very fortunate to have such a friendly, hard-working, and resilient housekeeping team on site. They handle every task, big or small, and consistently keep Wallingford Community Hospital looking spotless every day," and there is an accompanying photograph of the team and their award.
Retired hospital cleaning supervisor died after falls. A retired cleaning supervisor died after several falls, an inquest opening heard. Carol Ann Jarvis, 83, from Wallingford, was declared dead on October the 30th. She died after two recent falls that caused a deterioration in her health. An inquest opened at Oxfordshire Coroner's Court earlier this month on Thursday, November the 6th, and established the medical cause of Miss Jarvis's death. Her clinical cause of death was given as frailty of old age, dementia, and a fractured neck of the femur. Nursing staff verified death at 12:10 a.m. on October the 30th, and Miss Jarvis's body was identified by care home staff at Westgate House Care Home in Wallingford.
Nearly 70,000 roadside drain gullies cleaned across county. Work is being stepped up to make sure every roadside drain in Oxfordshire is cleaned and emptied this year. In April, Oxfordshire County Council began its enhanced programme to clean nearly 145,000 highway gullies and manholes by the end of March 2026. By the end of October, 67,000 gullies, which collect surface water at the roadside, had been emptied. The £2.6 million programme is taking place after an additional £1.5 million investment to improve highway drainage, was approved in the Council's 2025 to 2026 budget. The programme is being delivered by the Council's Highways Contractor M Group and Specialist Operator Drainline. To meet the ambitious target of cleaning every gully in the county in 12 months, the number of crews has doubled from 6 to 12, working two different shifts to maximise the efficiency of the gully tankers and make use of quieter roads in some locations during the evenings. Silt is removed from the drains using suction pipes, and then they are cleaned with high-pressure jets of water. Some have required digging out by hand where a lot of silt has accumulated. Drain cleaning was previously carried out on a four-year cycle, although high-priority drains, such as those in areas most at risk of flooding and on high-speed roads, were cleaned more regularly. Andrew Gant, County Council Cabinet Member for Transport Management, said, "We recognise the need to improve drainage, especially following the flooding in the county last year caused by exceptionally wet weather. I'm pleased that with the additional crews, we are on schedule to complete this ambitious drainage improvement programme. It is a huge task, but one that will make a big difference to our communities as extreme weather becomes more frequent. The funding is being used to empty gullies, carry out improved drainage management, and repair the infrastructure connecting the gullies to the outlets. Improving drainage also helps protect roads by getting water off the surfaces, reducing the risk of potholes forming during freezing weather. While gully cleaning is clearly is important in reducing surface water, no drainage system is designed to cope with the instances of extreme rainfall that Oxfordshire experienced in September 2024, when a month's worth of rain fell in just 36 hours. Drivers are asked to make sure their vehicles are not blocking access to drains when the work is due to take place, and to take care when driving past gully emptying operations. About 2,500 drainage gullies were unable to be cleaned when visited so far this year because they were blocked by vehicles. Drivers are being asked to look out for signs letting them know when work is taking place. Residents can report blocked drains and gullies through Fix My Street, which is available on Oxfordshire County Council's website.
Thames Water lifts hosepipe ban at last. Thames Water has officially lifted the hosepipe ban after 4 months. The temporary restriction on water use was introduced in July for customers in the OX, GL, SN, RG4, RG8 and RG9 postcode areas to help protect rivers and to ensure there was enough water to go round after prolonged dry weather. The ban was extended on several occasions, but now the water utility company says it is pleased to announce that the hosepipe ban has been lifted with immediate effect following heavy rainfall. Thames Water said its storage position has recovered well following the above average rainfall it has seen since October. Farmore Reservoir is now nearly full, and the aquifers in the Cotswold region are at normal levels for the time of year, meaning the risk of drought has now greatly reduced. Neville Muncaster, Strategic Water Resources Director at Thames Water, said, "We'd like to say a big thank you to our customers for their support in helping to protect water supplies over the last few months. The rain over the last few weeks has helped restore groundwater levels in the region, which were still recovering after a record-breaking summer. This allows us to now lift usage restrictions. We're encouraging all our customers to continue to use water wisely over the winter months so that water resources in our region continue to recharge, ready for spring and summer next year." Xmas tree chosen ahead of big switch on. The Christmas tree for Wallingford Town Square has been chosen by the Mayor as the town prepares for another festive lights switch on event. Wallingford's Town Mayor, Councillor Ros Lester, chose this year's tree at the Tree Barn in Christmas Forest in the week before the big lights switch on event. People are expected to turn out in their hundreds for the switch on, which will take place on Sunday, December the 7th in the marketplace.
With the tree already up in the square, the Town Council posted a statement thanking its parks team, Face North Forestry, and the team at CDC Electrical for installing the lighting around the town, on the tree and town hall. Wallingford is looking festive thanks to all of you, a statement from the council said. The Mayor expressed her particular thanks to Wallingford School, whose budding young artist created the pieces displayed on the Christmas tree's fencing. Wallingford will also be hosting a Christmas Carols Around the Tree event on Wednesday, December the 10th. All are welcome to attend. And this article is accompanied by the picture on the front page of the Herald, which says Mayor picks Christmas tree as town gears up for lights switch on, and she's dressed festively in a Santa outfit, leaning on a fence with one of the colourful pictures that have been prepared by the children.
Still a lot to do after bathing site report. The bathing water quality at a popular river site in Wallingford has improved from poor to sufficient, the latest Environment Agency report has said. Wallingford Beach became the second designated bathing site on the River Thames in May 2024, meaning it is tested weekly during the summer season and given a rating based on Environment Agency standards. This summer, the bathing site has been upgraded from a poor rating to sufficient, meaning it meets the minimum standards of bathing water regulations. South Oxfordshire District Council's River Thames champion, Joe Robb, said, "While the classification is an improvement on last year, which is to be celebrated, a rating of sufficient means there is still a lot to do to reach excellent, where the water is clean and of the highest quality. The bathing area at Wallingford is impacted by what flows from upstream. There is a large catchment area upstream of Wallingford Beach, which includes sewage treatment works, as well as rivers and streams that receive runoff from both urban and rural areas. We are relying on the Environment Agency and Thames Water working together to identify sources of pollution and take action to eliminate these for the good of all river users and our wildlife. The results are based on the last 4 years of testing by the Environment Agency, which monitors for two types of bacteria which indicate pollution, E. coli and intestinal enterococci. Tests are taken weekly during the bathing season, generally from May to September, and all results are published on the individual bathing sites' online profiles on the Gov.UK website. Charity Thames 21 championed the site's designation as a bathing site last year, as frequent water testing during the season from May to September puts pressure on water companies to maintain cleaner waterways and keeps river users informed of how safe it is to enter the water. Aggie Hodges, Bathing Water Development Officer for Thames 21, said, "It's great news for both people and wildlife that Wallingford Beach has achieved sufficient bathing water status this season. With only one other inland river site rated above poor this year, the result highlights the significant challenges facing England's rivers and the importance of this progress on the Thames at Wallingford. We hope to see further improvement in water quality and for Wallingford to demonstrate that healthy rivers are within reach." The other designated bathing site on the Thames is in Wolvercote, which received a poor rating for the second year in a row. Wallingford was the only inland bathing site which was rated above a poor. In the national picture, 392 out of 449 bathing sites were rated good or excellent, which equates to 87%, an improvement on last year's season. The number of sites rated poor went down from 37 last year to 32 in the most recent season.
Plea to get basics sorted to improve pavements. The County Council has been urged of a need to get its house in order regarding pedestrian safety and active travel in Wallingford. Mayor Ros Lester said Oxfordshire County Council should get the basics sorted out on pedestrian access and pavement safety before launching large-scale improvements to walking and cycling routes in the town. The comments come after a consultation on the Wallingford's local cycling and walking infrastructure plan, known as LCWIP, which was launched by the County Council. It is seeking views from people who live, work or travel in the Wallingford area on how active travel infrastructure could be improved. Asked to comment on the consultation, the Mayor said, "Before we talk about new routes or paths, Oxfordshire County Council needs to get its house in order. Our pavements are a trip hazard. I have received several complaints regarding the pavements in the centre of town. Many of the slabs are breaking up, making walking using mobility scooters and wheelchairs very difficult. I have no doubt that we need to encourage more people to walk or cycle, but please, Oxfordshire County Council, ensure that this can be done safely. Our pavements are very narrow and slope at a severe angle, making pushing a wheelchair hard and treacherous work. Mobility scooter users must find this quite frightening in places. Let's get the basics sorted out first." Oxfordshire County Council said it appreciates Ms. Lester's candid feedback and added, "Ensuring infrastructure is safe, accessible and fit for purpose is vital to the Council's walking and cycling plans. Officers are aware of the issue, but a Council spokesperson said, Wallingford Town Centre features historic York stone flags and natural stone curbs, which, while adding to the area's unique character, present distinct challenges for highway maintenance. Oxfordshire County Council is committed to addressing these issues. As part of our ongoing maintenance programme, we routinely inspect and repair footways, prioritising areas with reported hazards or higher footfall. We have logged the recent complaints about pavement conditions in Wallingford and will ensure that these are investigated as a matter of urgency. Where urgent repairs are needed, we will schedule these accordingly. We agree wholeheartedly with the Mayor's sentiment. Getting the basics right must underpin any ambitions to encourage more people to walk or cycle. The Council encouraged anyone with concerns about the pavements or other highway maintenance issues to submit them on the Fix My Street portal on the Oxfordshire County Council website, including detailed locations and photos."
Caddy liners from libraries. People are being offered free food waste caddy liners to help manage festive waste. The scheme, available throughout December at libraries across Oxfordshire whilst stocks last, aims to support residents during a season when food waste typically increases. Councillor Judy Roberts, Oxfordshire County Council's Cabinet Member for Place, Environment and Climate Action, said, "No one wants to waste food, but where that's not possible, and for inedible food waste such as potato peelings and turkey bones, home composting or recycling it using the curbside collection really helps to reduce the impact of waste disposal on the climate."
More fish found dead as pond incident continues. Fish are still dying in a traumatic Oxfordshire pond incident. The Environment Agency updated that new dead fish were still being found at a pond in Roke near Wallingford after over 1,000 deaths were initially confirmed in early November. The initial situation emerged on Saturday, November the 8th, when campaign group Windrush Against Sewerage Pollution, WASP, went to the site. The Environment Agency said that specialist officers were investigating the scene, whilst Thames Water also launched a probe due to its nearby sewage works hitting a problem at the same time. In an update to locals on Sunday, the 9th of November, Berwick Salome Parish Council confirmed that McAllister Contractors for Thames Water had caused a blockage. Neil Godfrey of the Parish Council's Drainage Group said, "While working on lining the section between the watercress beds or fishing pond and the Roke Marsh pumping station, the operation failed and caused a blockage. The location of these works reportedly connects through waterways to the Roke Pond, which includes grass carps, perch, roach and bream, and has been used as a fishing point for local anglers for many years. The sewage runs really close to the lake, said Ash Smith of WASP. There was a blockage and that happened at the same time. If that wasn't it, then it's a massive coincidence. Mr. Smith has suggested that a fluorescent dye test be used to establish whether there is a link between the sewage works and the pond, but in its most recent update, the Environment Agency did not confirm that this had been done. However, it did say more dead fish had been found. A spokesperson said, "We had some reports of new dead fish found last week. The investigation continues." As ever, if any of your readers have information or new concerns about the pond, they should contact the Environment Agency's 24-hour hotline immediately on 0800 807 060. Mr. Smith had warned that despite the traumatic scenes in early November, more fish could die, and the Environment Agency has confirmed he was right. He said this could be because their gills had been permanently damaged by pollution. In an update on November the 19th, Thames Water said the company is investigating the cause and that it takes its responsibilities seriously.
Invasive plant species booming across the county due to recent rainfall. Recent wet weather has allowed an invasive species of plant to thrive across Oxfordshire, experts have warned. Japanese knotweed is native to East Asia and was introduced to the UK in the 1800s, where it has since spread out of control. It can grow up to 4 inches a day and forms dense thickets which can kill native plant species, making it particularly harmful to the Oxfordshire countryside. As we continue through a wet autumn, having already battled patches of flooding amid Storm Claudia, the threat of the Japanese knotweed looms. There are a total of 394 verified knotweed sightings in Oxfordshire, including 85 alone in Oxford, according to research by EnviroNet. Daniel Docking of PCA previously said in September, "While experienced gardeners have a keen eye for plant species, there are many plant families such as gunnera, rhododendron and bamboo that have ornamental and invasive varieties, which can be confusing. As part of a recent government consultation, we've called for better plant labelling to help householders understand what they are buying and for nurseries and suppliers to adopt biosecurity management plans to help ensure businesses are working to reduce the risk of invasive plants spreading through horticultural pathways. The plant is identified by distinctive red stems and bamboo-like appearance. It can grow up to 8 feet tall and its roots can reach as wide as 28 feet.
Truck Festival announces headliners for 2026 event. The country's biggest festival dedicated to rock and pop has announced the headliners for its 2026 return. Two Door Cinema Club, the McCabees, the Wombats, CMAT and the Libertines will all headline Truck Festival, taking place at Hill Farm in Steventon near Didcot from July the 23rd to the 26th, 2026. Other acts announced including Kaiser Chiefs, Primal Scream, English Teacher, the Royston Club, Rizzle Kicks, Everything Everything, the Cribs, Friendly Fires and the Vaccines. Also playing is West Oxfordshire singer-songwriter Willie J. Healy. The festival has been a fixture for music lovers since 1998. Started by musician brothers Robin and Joe Bennett of the band Gold Rush and the Dreaming Spires, as a birthday bash for Robin, it has a proud history of pushing back against the commercialism of larger festivals and instead focusing on the music and upcoming talent. Their Veterans and Virgin stage remains a little corner of the old Truck Festival, loved by generations of Oxfordshire festival goers. The main stage, also known as the Truck Stage, has hosted many of the biggest names in music, including Foals, the Two Door Cinema Club, The Streets, Manic Street Preachers, and many more. Pre-sale tickets go on sale on Thursday, November the 27th at 6 p.m, with those on general sale becoming available at 10 a.m. on Friday. This year, Oxford United has extended its partnership with Truck Festival. The club and the festival have been working together for the past 3 years to deliver football-themed experiences to festival goers. This partnership, the first of its kind in UK football, sees the club and the festival collaborate on co-branded merchandise, ticket giveaways, matchday music, and joint marketing initiatives. The renewed partnership aims to provide even more engagement for both supporters and festival goers. And the article is accompanied by a very, very colourful photograph of one of the performers. It says Primal Scream at Beautiful Days.
There are just two announcements in our area. The Rev Jan Hiles died peacefully in her sleep on the 18th of November 2025 after a long illness. Funeral service at St Mary and Berin Church, Berinsfield, at 10 a.m. Monday the 8th of December, followed by interment at the village burial ground. Family flowers only. Donations to Dementia UK and Dog Trust UK via revjanhiles.muchloved.com, care of Howard Chadwick's funeral director. Marguerite Violet Pratt, née Clowes, of Cromarsh Gifford, passed away on the 4th of November 2025, aged 88. Much loved wife, mother and grandmother, who will be sadly missed by all her family and friends. The funeral will be held at South Oxfordshire Crematorium, Garford, at 2 p.m. on Tuesday, the 9th of December 2025. Family flowers only. Donations most welcome for brain tumour research. All inquiries care of Chadwick Funeral Service, 33 Benson Lane, Cromarsh, Gifford.
This is the On This Day column. In 2012, St James's Palace announced that the Duke and Duchess of Cambridge were expecting their first baby. Last year, Andrew R.T. Davies blasted a Muesli and Croissant brigade of Welsh Conservatives for destabilising the party and leading him to stand down. The leader of the Welsh Tories resigned after narrowly winning a confidence vote, 9-7, in his favour. And birthdays, Paul Nicholas, actor, 81, Daryl Hannah, actress, 65, Julianne Moore, actress, 65, Daniel Bedingfield, singer-songwriter, 46, Anna Klumpsky, actress, 45, and Amanda Seyfried, actress, 40. And then this day in history, in 1894, Robert Louis Stevenson, author of Treasure Island and other works, died of a stroke at his villa in Samoa. In 1910, neon lighting developed by French physicist Georges Claude was displayed for the first time at the Paris Motor Show. In 1919, French Impressionist painter Auguste Renoir died near Cannes. He was 78. 1926, novelist Agatha Christie disappeared from her Surrey home. She was discovered on December the 14th, staying under an assumed name at a hotel in Harrogate, but had no recollection of how she got there. 1967, the first heart transplant was performed by Dr. Christian Barnard and a team of surgeons in South Africa. In 1984, more than 3,000 people died in a chemical factory spillage at Bhopal in central India. And in 1988, Health Minister Edwina Curry claimed that most of Britain's egg production was affected by salmonella.
And now for the football. Ewes gain 3 points in a fight for survival. Oxford United beat Ipswich Town 2-1 as Premslaw Placeta secured a massive 3 points for Gary Rowett and the Ewes. Mark Harris' opener was cancelled out by Leif Davis before the pole sealed 3 points with a neat finish at the Kassam. Oxford started Friday's game fairly slowly, sitting back into an early low block and allowing Kieran McKenna's men to boss the ball. A first effort for the visitors came through Jaden Philogene, who had space on the left to cut in and shoot, only to have his effort blocked. More chances came for the Tractor Boys, George Hurst bringing a ball down in the box and having a shot blocked before Egerly put a shot wide after working space in the Ewes penalty area. A second attempt from Egerly came even closer for the visitors as Davis stood a cross up for the Norwegian, who nodded the ball over the post and wide. With Oxford pressing high from its switch goal kicks, the Ewes found their moment. Aza Matusuia lost the ball near the town box, which Mark Harris pounced on. The striker had his first effort saved, but swept the second pass Christian Walton, who could not recover quickly enough. The goal was the Welshman's first of the season as he looks to turn his form round, and it clearly did his confidence a world of good. Just minutes later, the 26-year-old tried to lob a wandering Walton from just inside the Ipswich half, but could not get enough of it to test the keeper. United kept up their momentum, Brian de Keersmeeker firing an effort straight at Walton as the Belgian searches for his first goal in yellow. A final chance came just before the half-time whistle as Stan Mills sat his man down and dug a shot out from the edge of the area, which was parried by the town keeper. After petering out in the first period, the Tractor Boys came out swinging in the second half. The equaliser came as Davis hit a sweet-sided side-foot trolley past Jamie Cumming, who was rooted to the spot. With a spring in their step, Ipswich kept testing Cumming. Marcelino Nunes and George Hurst both forced impressive saves out of the Ewes keeper, who stood firm. A Will Vaux's long row caused trouble at the other end as Michael Helix flicked in on Will Lancashire, whose shot was saved. The next chance Oxford took as De Keersmeeker sent a lovely ball over to substitute Placeta, who brought it down with aplomb before slotting the ball into the bottom right corner. Fellow sub then, Oli Romani, almost put a wonder strike into the top left corner prior to Tyler Goodram poking an effort at Walton from a tight angle and De Keersmeeker sending one wide at the near post. That's where the old assault began. With less than 5 minutes remaining, Cumming was forced into a brilliant save to keep Ivan Azan out at point-blank range before Nunes had a shot blocked and Jack Clark saw his follow-up effort squandered. More Ipswich pressure came to nothing as the Ewes remained structured and steadfast to see out an enormous 3 points to go 19th in the championship at the start of the weekend.
Okay, so that concludes our recording for this evening. Following this, there are a few articles included from the monthly magazines, which we hope you enjoy those. But thank you for listening and goodbye.
Goodbye.
Hello, I'm Kate, and I'm reading from Round and About. And I'm going to start by reading the editor's introduction. December brings sparkle, sequins and spending panic, but you can and shall go to the ball on a budget. That's why I loved my own recent festive charity shop challenge. I bought not one but four Christmas outfits for under £50 and can't wait to show you. Join me in browsing the racks in your local Sobel House Hospice charity shops. Discover hidden gems. Topless green velvet jumpsuit, anyone? While helping local families. Every purchase at your local charity shop helps the planet, your pocket, and great causes. And now a little poem. There's more to Christmas. There's more to Christmas. There's more, much more to Christmas than candlelight and cheer. It's the spirit of sweet friendship that brightens all the year. It's thoughtfulness and kindness, it's hope reborn again, for peace, for understanding, and for goodwill. to all men.
And the last item from Round and About magazine is entitled Presence, Not Presents. As Christmas draws near, our thoughts turn to festive gatherings, shared meals and time with loved ones. But while many of us look forward to the season, it can be a difficult time for older people, especially those who are alone, managing health concerns or coping with loss. As we prepare for the holidays, it's a good time to reflect not only on how we can include older family members in our celebrations, but also on how we can better support their needs moving forward. Older generations have given so much to their families and communities. Now they deserve our care, compassion, and attention, particularly at a time of year that can amplify feelings of loneliness. Whether they live alone, with family, or in care homes, they need to feel valued and connected. Sometimes the greatest gift we can offer is our time, whether that's a visit, a phone call, or simply including them in our Christmas plans. The festive season can also be a useful time to gently re-evaluate the care needs of an older loved one. Are they coping well at home? Is mobility becoming an issue? Are they getting out and socialising or showing signs of isolation or confusion? These questions are important, and noticing changes now can help prevent bigger problems later. Christmas often brings families together, making it a natural opportunity to assess whether more support might be needed, whether that's additional help at home, regular companionship, or even exploring short-term care options. Respite care is one option that many people don't realise is available through care homes. This allows elderly individuals to stay in a professional, supportive environment for a short period, often during times when family carers need a break, or going away, or simply need time to recharge. Far from being a last resort, respite stays can be a positive experience, offering social interaction and activities and expert care in a warm, festive setting. For caregivers who often give tirelessly throughout the year, respite care can be a welcome relief, helping to reduce stress and avoid burnout. For elderly individuals, it's an opportunity to experience a different setting, make new friends, and sometimes even enjoy Christmas in a vibrant community atmosphere. This Christmas, look beyond the presents and think about presence, being there for our elderly loved ones in meaningful ways, by checking in, spending time, and considering whether their care needs have changed. We can help ensure that they feel supported, safe, and part of the joy this season is meant to bring.
Back with the bridge, this is Beyond the Fridge, the Land of Wurst and Strudel, and it's written by Jane May, and she's, for context, she's talking about a riverboat cruise they did on the Upper Danube. In Vienna, we deserted our sightseeing group, trudging endlessly round the rather dour cathedral with a rather dour guide, in order to have the full Viennese experience of Café und Kuchen in a glamorous gilt and mirror café, complete with rather loose red wallpaper and little ballroom chairs. At 4 in the afternoon, what else to do except drink bowls of steaming hot chocolate and demolish strudel and sacerdote with huge piles of cream? Floating downriver through the beautiful Wachau Gorge, we admired the hard work and fortitude of those who grow grapes on the little narrow terraces on the side of the gorge, where machinery cannot be used due to the steepness and/or narrowness of the ledges. I gather Austrian wine is now a thing, and we were delighted to pass an afternoon in a family wine cellar, which dated from the 16th century. We heard of the tradition of commissioning a new fermentation cask when a family member is born, which is then named after them. We heard from their delightful owner about the skills required to work the vines in this landscape and climate while enjoying their sparkling Zweigelt Rosé, Riesling and Grüne Veitlin wines. In Regensburg, we sat in the sun outside a small restaurant in a long conversation with the two Bulgarian lady owners. They explained they had come to the UK from Bulgaria, bringing their life savings with them in the hope of setting up a restaurant here in England. Regretfully, they found the red tape and lack of support for small enterprise here defeated them, but they are now running a successful enterprise in Germany. How sad is that? Later in the day, we enjoyed the obligatory Bratwurst mit Kipfert and Sauerkraut, hot sausage in a roll with pickled cabbage to you and me. As an accompaniment, we relished our new addiction, the sweet Bavarian mustard, Sussserif, or Sussersenf, which has a hint of cloves, apples, juniper berries, allspice and nutmeg. One of the greatest joys of the trip was our day in Passau. By chance, we found we could buy a ticket for the midday organ recital, the largest church organ in the world, in the cathedral. After days of visiting dark, gloomy and oppressive churches, the riotous extravaganza of Baroque architecture was almost a shock. Surrounded by cavorting cherubs, luscious Madonnas, dripping garlands of fruit and veg, augmented by a huge ornate golden pulpit and an enormous silver altarpiece, we reverberated joyfully to the sound of Bach and Vidor. We were so energised by this huge white space, which felt like being inside a large meringue, that we leapt out straight into a medieval gasthaus where we lunched like kings on calf's liver, fried potatoes and pork schnitzel, with a small beer kindly provided for weak English folk by the proprietor. And the Wallingford Christmas Fair will be on Sunday, the 7th of December, in the marketplace from 10 a.m. to 5 p.m. Craft and food stalls, live music and entertainment, Santa Dash, fairground rides, Santa's Grotto, lantern procession and a dog show.
The next article is also from Round and About magazine. The spirit of Christmas shines brighter thanks to the kindness of people supporting Sobel House Hospice. For families spending their final Christmas together, that generosity helps create moments of love, laughter and light. A £5.50 donation can fund Christmas dinner for a patient, a small act that makes a difficult day special. Every contribution helps turn the hospice into a warm, joyful home with fairy lights, music and togetherness. Your support also reaches patients at home, where Sobel nurses and care teams provide compassion and comfort, even on Christmas Day. To donate, offer to volunteer and more, please visit the Sobel House website.